Welcome to the Lancet Respiratory Medicine Podcast. I'm Rebecca Craven, and it's my pleasure to introduce Professor Carol Hodgson, Head of the Division of Clinical Trials and Cohort Studies in the School of Public Health and Preventive Medicine, and Deputy Director of the Intensive Care Research Centre at Monash University, Australia. Carol has kindly agreed to discuss recent advances in our understanding of in-hospital and post-discharge outcomes among critically ill patients who receive extracorporeal membrane oxygenation, or ECMO, including patients with COVID-19-related acute respiratory distress syndrome, or ARDS. First, could you explain what ECMO is and why different types of ECMO might need to be provided for different forms of respiratory or cardiac failure?
Well, there's a subset of patients who develop severe organ failure for whom it may not be possible to provide the right amount of either ventilation for respiratory support or support for the cardiac system in the event of heart failure. And either way, ECMO is a form of extracorporeal life support that can partially or fully bypass the injured heart or lungs to support gas exchange or to support the cardiac pump, and to facilitate the delivery of a lower intensity of mechanical ventilation. So while ECMO might have started as a salvage strategy to address extreme dangerous derangements with gas exchange, our understanding of the harms associated with injurious ventilation has grown, and one of the key mechanisms of benefit, particularly in VV ECMO for respiratory failure, is thought to mitigate the VILI, the ventilator-induced lung injury, and to facilitate even greater reductions in mechanical ventilation intensity, often termed ultra-lung protective ventilation, and allow time for the native lung to heal. So ECMO can be implemented primarily for respiratory support through veno-venous cannulation, or that's called VV ECMO, or for cardiac support through veno-arterial cannulation, or VA ECMO. And this discussion will focus primarily on the evidence surrounding the use of extracorporeal lung support for respiratory failure, so for VV ECMO. And oxygenation is primarily blood flow rate dependent, while CO2 clearance in ECMO is principally dependent on the sweet gas flow rate through the membrane lung.
Before the era of COVID-19, what did we know about the factors that affect the survival and longer-term health of patients who receive ECMO? And how did these factors affect the selection of patients for ECMO support and the timing of ECMO?
Well, in 2009, Giles Peak and colleagues published the CESAR trial in The Lancet. It was a landmark study evaluating the early application of VV ECMO in patients for severe and potentially reversible acute respiratory failure refractory to conventional management. So they randomised 180 patients to be transported to an ECMO centre for consideration of receiving ECMO or for management of respiratory failure without ECMO. And there was a significant difference in the primary outcome of survival without disability at 6 months in favour of patients who were randomised to the ECMO group, 63% versus 47%. However, the CESAR trial has been really criticised, and that's partly because only 75% of those who were randomised to the intervention group actually received ECMO, and only 70% who were treated received lung protective ventilation at any point during their care. So given the important differences in the management between the two groups that may have influenced the outcome of ECMO, there has been some concern about extrapolating the findings of the CESAR trial more widely. So subsequently, Alain Coombe and his group published the EOLIA trial, the Extracorporeal Membrane Oxygenation for Severe Acute Respiratory Distress Syndrome, EOLIA trial, in the New England Journal of Medicine in 2018. And they addressed some of the methodological challenges that were raised from the CESAR trial. So Alain Coombe and his colleagues randomised 331 patients to receive either ECMO within 7 days of mechanical ventilation or conventional mechanical ventilation alone. Physicians were encouraged to use neuromuscular blockade and prone positioning prior to randomization according to best practice. The trial was stopped after enrolment of 240 of the planned 331 patients due to fertility. So although 60-day mortality was lower in the ECMO group, it was not statistically significant. So the mortality rate was 35% in the intervention group compared to 46% in the control group. Key secondary outcomes of treatment failure defined as death or crossover to ECMO in the control group were significantly greater in the control group, and the cohort of patients who met stringent criteria to crossover from the control group and receive late ECMO had even higher mortality compared to those enrolled in the ECMO group. The frequency of complications wasn't different between the control group and the intervention group. And the results of the Eolia trial really have suggested that early VV ECMO may have a role in reducing mortality in patients with the severe forms of ARDS. It wasn't really accepted, though, until there was a further Bayesian analysis along with an individual patient data meta-analysis at a study level and at a network meta-analysis level that all provided additional support for the benefit of VV ECMO in severe ARDS. So currently, patient selection for VV ECMO is generally considered according to the criteria of the Eolia trial. So inclusion or patients who would be considered for ECMO would have a PaO2 to FiO2 ratio of less than 80 millimetres of mercury for more than 6 hours, a PaO2 to FiO2 ratio of less than 50 millimetres of mercury for more than 3 hours, or a pH of less than 7.25 with a partial pressure of carbon dioxide of greater than or equal to 60 for more than 6 hours. And patients would be excluded if they had advanced age, end-stage chronic organ failure or significant comorbidities, severe acute multiple organ failure, severe acute neurological injury with poor prognosis, if they were unable to receive systemic anticoagulants or blood products, if they were immunocompromised, or if they had prolonged duration of mechanical ventilation.
And what do we know about the long-term multidimensional impairments among patients who've received ECMO support and survived critical illness?
Well, we recently completed a prospective multicenter registry embedded cohort study at 23 hospitals in Australia, which was published in the Lancet Respiratory Medicine in 2022. So our national or binational ECMO registry, the Excel registry, includes all adults who are over 18 years of age, admitted to ICU and are participating in ECMO or have received ECMO. So all patients who received ECMO support for respiratory failure, cardiac failure or cardiac arrest during the ICU stay were eligible for this study that looked at the 6-month functional outcomes. Outcome data were available for 88% of our 442 enrolled patients, and the primary outcome was death or moderate to severe disability at 6 months. And this was reported in 66% of 391 patients. So 2/3 of our patients were dead or disabled, moderate to severely, at 6 months after receiving ECMO. So that was 67% of patients who received VA ECMO, 54% of patients who received VV ECMO, and 82% of patients who received ECMO for extracorporeal cardiopulmonary resuscitation or ECPR. So patients who died or had disability at 6 months were more heavily sedated. They had higher oxygen requirements and a higher lactate in the first 24 hours of ECMO compared to those who were alive and without disability. And new disability was reported at 6 months in 37% of our 165 survivors. So that means that patients who previously didn't have disability had disability, or patients who had existing disability had worsened. So overall, patients who had died or who had new disability at 6 months at baseline were older and had higher illness severity, had more organ failure, diabetes or cardiac arrest. And in survivors with pre-hospital measures of functioning, new disability at 6 months was reported in over 1/3 of the cohort, and it was common across all areas of functioning, that is physical, psychological and cognitive function. And over 1/4 of our survivors who were employed before hospital admission were subsequently unemployed owing to their health at 6 months.
From the early stages of the COVID-19 pandemic, some critically ill patients were selected to receive ECMO support. So what have we learned about the survival of patients during the first wave of the pandemic, when intensive care units were under huge strain, and during subsequent waves of COVID-19?
Well, reported mortality rates early in the pandemic were comparable to those that were seen in the intervention arm of the Eolia trial, and that was very reassuring for clinicians. For example, there was 31% mortality reported at 60 days in a large single-centre study from Paris in France. There was 33% mortality at 60 days in a large cohort across 60 hospitals in the US. There was 37% in-hospital mortality at 90 days from the extracorporeal life support organisation, the ELSO registry, which included 213 hospitals across 36 countries. And there was 37% in-hospital mortality reported in a meta-analysis of studies spanning from December 2019 through to January 2021, which included 1,896 patients. And again, this study was heavily weighted towards the ELSO registry. But despite encouraging data early on in the pandemic, as we continued throughout the pandemic, there was increased mortality. So an analysis of a survey from the European chapter of ELSO reported 56% mortality between September 2020 and March 21, as compared to 47% prior to that time period. And data from 24 centres in Spain and Portugal suggested a higher in-hospital mortality after June 2020 at 60% compared to before that point in time where it was 41%. And that went on similarly in other countries, including France and Germany, who also published high mortality rates. An updated meta-analysis of studies reporting data between December 2019 to January 2022, which included over 18,000 patients, revealed a pooled mortality of 49% among patients with COVID-19 receiving ECMO, with increasing mortality in the second half of 2020 at 46% compared to the first half of 2020, where it was 41%, and an even higher mortality at 62% in the first half of 2021. So a number of potential reasons for increasing mortality over time have been speculated during the pandemic, and that included a greater selection over time for treatment refractory disease. So patients who didn't respond to COVID-19 therapies were increasingly enrolled into observational studies of ECMO. Increased use of non-invasive ventilatory support prior to intubation and ECMO, a rise in superimposed bacterial pneumonia in the setting of immunosuppressed treatments for COVID-19, an emergence of variants with differential effects on prognosis, increased use of ECMO by less experienced centres, and variations in patient selection for ECMO. So in 2022, our group was led by Alexandra Tran and Dan Brody, published the prognostic factors associated with mortality in patients receiving VV ECMO for COVID-19 in Lancet Respiratory Medicine. We included 42 observational studies and over 17,000 patients, and we found that factors with a moderate or a high certainty of association with increased mortality included older age, male sex, chronic lung disease, pre-cannulation disease factors such as longer duration of symptoms, longer duration of mechanical ventilation, higher partial pressure of CO2 and higher driving pressure, and other centre factors such as less experience with ECMO. So this highlights several well-established principles in the management of patients on ECMO: the importance of patient selection, the effect of pre-ECMO injurious lung ventilation on prognosis, and the potential benefit of the centralisation of ECMO use across regions to centres with more experience. So in a European observational study published by Matthew Schmidt and colleagues in Lancet Respiratory Medicine in 2023, they looked at 21 experienced ECMO centres across 8 countries and enrolled 1,345 patients to determine the outcomes of patients with ARDS receiving ECMO for different variants of COVID-19. So they found that the independent predictors of mortality were advanced age, immunocompromised patients, longer time for ICU admission to intubation, need for renal replacement therapy, increased hemodynamic organ failure, increased partial pressure of carbon dioxide, and increased lactate prior to ECMO. And after adjusting for these variables, there was increased mortality with the Delta variant of COVID-19 compared to other variants. The authors hypothesised that this might be due to a higher viral load and inflammatory response, and they really reinforced the need for vaccination and updated selection criteria for ECMO should a new variant with poor outcomes be identified in the future. So finally, in a study from Roberto Larusso and colleagues using ELSO data from 133 centres in 21 countries, they aim to describe the in-hospital variables associated with outcomes and the status of patients at 6 months after ECMO initiation. for COVID-19. They found that 50% of patients had died in hospital and that multiple organ failure was the leading cause of death. And similar to the other previous studies I've described, there was higher in-hospital mortality associated with age over 60, use of inotropes and vasopressors prior to ECMO initiation, chronic renal failure, and time from intubation to ECMO initiation of 4 days or more. At 6 months, one quarter of survivors had returned to full-time work and respiratory rehabilitation was required in 17% of these survivors, with the most common residual symptom being dyspnea.
In view of advances in our understanding of in-hospital and post-discharge outcomes, can you identify changes that are needed in the selection and care of patients who receive ECMO or in the multidisciplinary care that's offered after discharge?
So, I mean, there are several key areas that have been identified as opportunities to improve long-term outcomes for patients who receive ECMO. So these patients frequently report high amounts of new disability and unemployment owing to health. So further research is really needed to assess interventions that might reduce disability and improve the ability of survivors to return to work. So there are several new studies on rehabilitation during ECMO that are emerging, and these might inform future practice. In addition, there's a need to establish best practice models of care to support patients during their recovery, particularly during transitions of care where patients have expressed that there's really very high stress levels and dissatisfaction with care. I strongly believe this needs to be multidisciplinary, similar to new models of care for patients, for example, with major trauma, where they're assessed and managed by the multidisciplinary team to optimise rehabilitation. But there remain many unanswered questions regarding the use of ECMO in patients with ARDS, the optimal timing of initiation of ECMO, the ideal candidates for ECMO, ECMO circuit and ventilatory management, and the determinants of ECMO futility. And emerging evidence in critical care has highlighted several things, including that there might be a heterogeneity of treatment effect amongst different, for example, diagnostic groups, and that there might be sub-phenotypes of ARDS that exist, which might have limited the effectiveness of standard treatment algorithms on interventions. So we then need to be able to use the appropriate sub-phenotype and include ECMO in, but not likely all subgroups.
What would you identify as the priorities for research to better understand short-term and long-term outcomes after ECMO?
So the key aspects of ECMO-related management that are under investigation include the timing of ECMO, anticoagulation strategies and monitoring, transfusion thresholds for blood product administration, how and when to facilitate early rehabilitation for patients who are receiving ECMO, approaches to liberation or weaning from ECMO, pharmacokinetics and the use of medications during ECMO, and the various ventilation settings. And these are particularly relevant for VV ECMO, but also some of these for VA ECMO. We certainly also need long-term follow-up across a range of functional domains, including physical, psychological, and cognitive domains. And we need more data across specific diagnostic groups to inform the heterogeneity of treatment effect. And I think that the COVID-19 pandemic has highlighted how demand can quickly outstrip supply, and it's really reinforced the importance of valid and reliable methods to identify the best candidates prior to the initiation of ECMO and to determine futility in the setting of long ECMO runs.
Thanks for talking to The Lancet Respiratory Medicine.
Thank you.